Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we've got a fascinating show lined up for you. It actually brings me back quite a few years to a person that I crossed paths with in my medical training. His name is Dr. Noel Gardner. Noel, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Noel, you and I spent 4 years together as medical students out in Southern California, and we had the privilege of reconnecting during a reunion recently. And I was just fascinated to hear your life story. It's amazing that even though we spent all those years together, a number of us, there are still a lot of stories that I was hearing for the first time just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, there's no question. And part of those 4 years were so intensely buried in books and in labs and in clinical rotations that in many ways we didn't get to know each other as well as we'd like to. And there's something rich and wonderful about being able to look back over a lifetime together with colleagues years later and hear what actually happened. So I really valued that time we had together with our classmates.
Well, one of the things that I was really struck by is for all these years I've been working in Indian country, working closely with Native American tribes, indigenous peoples throughout really the globe. I mean, mostly in North America, but we had the privilege of doing things abroad as well. And I never realized this deep connection you had with Indian country. And I think as we get started, you're, of course, an MD, you're a psychiatrist, you've had a successful career. I mean, if someone does a Google search on Dr. Noel Gardner, they'll see you've been faculty for many years at the University of Utah, you've been a forensic psychiatrist, all kinds of things. But I don't know that they'd find out about that early life history that you shared with me not long ago. So tell us a little bit about this deep connection with Indian country.
So it's true. It goes way early into my life. It is part of my lifeblood. I was born 20 minutes after midnight Christmas night in 1951. What that means is that every year I am just very grateful that my birthday isn't on Christmas Day. I mean, I'm willing to compete, but competing with Jesus on his birthday is above my pay grade. So I celebrate it. And I was the youngest of three children, quite a bit younger than my older brother and sister. My father was a general practitioner, that is a medical doctor who doesn't do any specialty training. They do their 4 years of medical school, do an internship for 1 year, and then they went out and did a little bit of everything. They delivered babies. They did a lot of their own surgery. I mean, they literally did everything. And he settled in a little tiny town in southwestern Colorado. He graduated in 1944, and because he was in medical school during World War II, the military didn't take him out of medical school, but after medical school was over, he was required to give his country the service he would have done during the war. And he chose to do the Indian Health Service. And so our family moved from a little town in Colorado to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where he worked in an Indian hospital and clinics. I was so young, I have no memory of that. I was 2 or 3 years of age. But subsequently, he was moved to Tuba City, Arizona, and was the chief medical officer of a Indian Health Service clinic there. And that's where I have my very first memories. So I was surrounded primarily by Navajo Indians, and they were the people that we lived around and were part of our lives. When he completed that service, he moved to Cortez, Colorado, and it was just 10 miles from the capital of the Ute Indian Nation. And so I grew up in classes with Ute Indians in my class, and so it was very much in my blood from an early age.
I love this perspective. So it's a cross-cultural perspective, if you will, but it's one that's rooted in Indian country. And it seems like many of the things that I've heard that are values among First Nation peoples, it seems like your life has followed in that trajectory of giving back and wanting to make a difference and, you know, seeing things from a broader perspective, not just an individualistic perspective. Is that too much to read into your life story?
Not at all. What I did is I really watched my father after he did his required service. He settled into a medical practice with two similar colleagues that were general practitioners in a town that had no specialists. This was Cortez, Colorado. And fairly soon he was eager to do more with the Navajo people. And he got a pilot's license and became a part owner on a little small four-seater, a single engine airplane so that he could fly down to Monument Valley. Now we see Monument frequently, pictures of it, so picturesque, but there were no roads in and out of that area hardly at all. This was just very early in the 1950s. And I remember my parents talking about the areas where there were no roads and they had to drive up dry creek beds to get where they were going. But he could fly in rather quickly. What might have taken 5, 6, 7 hours by a car could be done in less than an hour in a single engine airplane. And he went down frequently for weekends to open the very first clinic at Monument Valley and then would go down for extended periods as they developed the first hospital for the Navajo people at Monument Valley. And by then I was 5, 6, 7 years of age and remember very well being there for weeks at a time. He'd take his vacation time and devote it to going down and supporting the development of clinics and hospitals at Monument Valley.
So you have this early life history of someone who's very giving, they're interested in service, they're a physician. And I know you and I have spoken a little bit about your life journey. That was not a foregone conclusion that you were going to follow in your dad's footsteps as a physician. But is there kind of a short version of that story that might be inspiring maybe to some of our listeners about how the Creator can guide people along some various trajectories and get them in the very place they're supposed to be?
Yeah. You know, I look back, I had no interest in science or math. In fact, they scared me to death. I loved the humanities. I loved music. I was very engaged in music and I liked history and trying to decide what to do with my life. I decided that I would be a church pastor, a minister, and I did theological training and headed in that direction. But then it's sort of the door shut for that. And I found myself grappling with what to do and where to go. And my dad had been a doctor and my grandfather had been a doctor. And I thought, well, maybe I can do that. So that's when I applied and got accepted to medical school, where we met each other for the first time along with our colleagues and poured ourselves into medical training. For part of that time, I felt very lost. I went through a personal, terrible crisis. And it was at the time where almost everything that I had believed and counted on had fallen away from me. And I went through a period of time where I'd wake up every morning and wish that I hadn't woken up. I think if I'd had a little more courage or been more impulsive, I may have might have attempted to end my life. I'm just angry that that life kept me going. But in the middle of that, I was met by one of the most wonderful, kindest people. I was up on one of the clinical rotations with my white coat on and stethoscope rotating. I can't remember which service. And I got a tap on my shoulder. And I turned around and there was an older gentleman and he said, I just have the sense that you and I need to talk. And I said, oh. And we set up a time and from then on, I met him every week in his little office. And for the first, I don't know how many meetings, I'd come in and just rage at the stupidity of the universe. And I could tell the stories of people. I remember being on a rotation, and I was not involved in the actual care of this patient, but they brought in a woman and a young infant. And she had gotten into an argument with her boyfriend who was, had gotten violent, and he grabbed a big pot of boiling water and threw it on her. And she had an infant in her arms in his pajamas, and it soaked him. And he had third-degree burns over 60-70% of his body. And I didn't do the care, but I heard later that he did not survive. The infant did not. And I remember walking out of the hospital that night and looking up at the stars and saying, where are you? What's the meaning of a universe that people suffer meaninglessly like this? So I'd go in and I'd rage at the universe, and Will would just listen. He was a wonderful listener. And at the end of our time together, he would put his hands together, he'd cup them together, and he'd hold them up to me as I was getting ready to leave, and he'd say, just remember, I'm holding you.
Mm.
That capacity to be a holding person for people who are suffering was for me a pivotal moment. And when I decided to go into psychiatry, I decided I wanted to work on the medical surgical floors because I had watched how he treated. He would go on rounds and he would listen to people. And he would often say, so what are you famous for? And the patient is sitting there laying in bed worried. I'd say, well, I'm not famous. He said, oh, everybody's famous for something. What are you famous for? And they would say something like, well, I'm pretty good at fixing, you know, car engines, or I have, everybody loves my chocolate chip cookies, or whatever it was. And we would walk in, they looked so defeated, and 15 minutes later we'd walk out and they were sitting up. And I thought, man, for people to be at a moment of vulnerability and to be so capable of nurturing and helping them through a difficult time, that's what I want to do with my life. And I decided that I would be a consultation psychiatrist in a medical surgical setting.
Wow. So basically what I'm hearing in your story, Dr. Gardner, is basically your own vulnerability, the challenges you went through, your own needs, and seeing how those were met by a caring individual inspired you to really take up the same work. Am I hearing that clearly?
Nailed it exactly. And I remember him saying to me, and I've thought of this so many times, he says, just remember, your pain is your gift. Your pain is the gift that you will give to your patients, because it will be a bridge between you, the bridge over which you walk into a new life. It's the bridge over troubled waters that your empathy can be.
This is such a powerful theme, Dr. Gardner. I know you've worked with people across the spectrum. I mean, as far as demographics, I mean, racial, ethnic, education, finances. We've talked among ourselves about that. But everybody deals with trauma. They deal with these questions, these deep questions. And we want to talk about how healing can come in the midst of our challenges, in the midst of our difficulty. I know that's been a lot of your work, but we have to stop and just kind of frame things in one other simple way, and that is, you and I are speaking as physicians. The practical question as we move into this show, are we going to be talking about things that a person can apply regardless of whether they have medical training or not?
Oh, I think so. In fact, I remember reading a study that was reported in which they asked patients after they had been discharged from the hospital who was the most helpful to them. And the most common response was a lady who was a cleaning person who would come into the rooms to clean the rooms, who was so kind and loving.
I love this. I love this. We're talking with Dr. Noel Gardner. We've got important lessons for you, for those around you. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're going to be coming back with more right after these important messages. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at AIANL.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, AIANL.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA service center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Dr. Noel Gardner is my guest. He's sharing from his own practical, personal experience, as well as his work as a psychiatrist over the years. Noel, we've been talking some about really the common human experience. We all go through trauma, difficulties. Some of us experience more challenges, greater grief than others. You've shared a bit about your own story and how you were nurtured in that time of grief and loss by a mentor there during your medical school years, inspired you to do the same, to give back to folks. Let's step back and talk to my listening audience. There's people tuning in. They've been traumatized. Maybe they lost a job. Maybe it's a relationship they've lost. Maybe a loved one they just buried. And they're just reeling. They're dealing like you were in that medical rotation, kind of, you know, shouting out at the heavens and wondering, where is God? Is there any meaning? They don't have someone who's come alongside them like you did and tap them on the shoulder and say, let's sit down for a while. What can we tell someone over the airwaves that can make any difference at all?
That's a tall order, isn't it? I do think that, there's a number of resources now online. I mean, if you go to YouTube, there are nurturing teachers of various kinds and a lot of availability. A lot of times, I think it's hard to hear it when you're suffering. You feel like you understand your pain. It was one of the great gifts that Will was able so well to listen with kindness, without judgment. And I think that was the sort of foundation of his miraculous work with so many people, is he genuinely saw the incredible value of every person. Mm. And if you give that gift to to each other as much as we're able to. It blesses not only the recipient, but the extraordinary thing is when you're able to just bring kindness, you don't have to have solutions. And when you can bring that kindness, it nurtures you as well. We need to be in community. One of the things I learned when, as a child in the Navajo people, was these were amazingly kind people who really had a sense of community. Now, communities have been broken up and broken apart by some really selfish and ruthless people and are wounded. But as much as they can be community to each other, that is an incredibly wonderful healing thing. And I could see that. I couldn't miss it. And I've seen it again across my lifetime. That sense of being community to each other is profoundly healing.
So I'm hearing a number of lessons from your life story and from what you just shared, Dr. Gardner. One, you told about this question that your mentor would ask people, what are you famous for? And to me, it seemed like part of the magic of that question was just getting people to reflect on their own talents, their own gifts, gratitude for what abilities they have. So anybody could theoretically ask that question of themselves right now as they're listening, correct?
Correct.
And maybe they might even have a smile on their face because they realize, yeah, they have made an impact in some ways. That patient told them as the janitor or the cleaning lady how impactful they were.
Yeah, I think as physicians, so often we're very task-focused and we feel rushed and we run in and we see a patient in the hospital bed and we immediately go through the vitals and the laboratory reports and make our decisions and we're gone. And once in a while you'll see someone, a clinician, or they don't have to be a clinician. The cleaning lady, she would say, how are you? Oh, you look so lovely today. And she would smile. And afterwards, they were shocked when they said the person in this hospital was the most impactful on people afterwards was the cleaning lady.
Wow.
She was fully human and affirming and available. So you don't have to have a fancy degree to make a difference in people's lives.
And so this whole idea of fostering community and connectedness, and it's kind of interesting. You mentioned YouTube and the great resources that are available virtually. So we can get a lot of training, insight from amazing teachers. Folks can tune into the radio. Hopefully they're getting some great insights from you, Dr. Gardner, as they're listening today. I'm getting some great insights. Hopefully my audience is resonating as well. But we're still not really developing the deepest kind of community, although there are platforms where people can interact with others online. What can an individual do if they're feeling disconnected? I mean, it seems especially hard for a person who's feeling vulnerable and not sensing support to take any initiative to find it, right?
Yeah, and you're asking a very tough question. When people become clinically depressed, often they avoid contact, the contact they often really need because it feels overwhelming to them and they don't have the motivation. Certainly where there are resources for mental health services, I would encourage that. I would certainly hope that they are fortunate enough to have someone who's a good listener. And that those are sort of foundational. I think sometimes we're so busy we forget. Medicine has, the practice of medicine has become very much focused on disease. I remember I used to be a part of the ethics faculty that taught medical ethics and frequently would give the last presentation of the year as they took the last 2 weeks before graduation at the University of Utah to do their discussions and dealing with medical ethics. And I remember I used to say, okay, to the medical school class, here you are. By this time next week, you'll have an MD after your name and you'll be terrified because you'll be starting your internship soon. But I said, if someone dropped in from outer space and knew nothing about who doctors were and about our culture and asked you, well, who are you? What do you do? And you said, well, I'm a doctor. What would you tell them? And I did this many years, and I never got any answer other than some version of, well, a doctor is somebody who diagnoses and treats disease. And that's what we spent almost every minute for our 4 years of medical school, trying to understand the basis of disease and how to treat it. And I said, what's so extraordinary is, you know, disease, we have this sort of science behind it and the treatment and all the research. But until the last couple hundred years, we didn't know anything about the disease model and all the science. There have been wonderful healers for millennia.
Hmm.
They do. I'll tell you, they were very good at helping people, not with disease, but with suffering.
Hmm.
Everybody suffers, whether it's divorce, whether it's a death, a failure in life. How do we help people with this issue of suffering, that their lives are important and valuable? And as we find value in our own experience, and I think this is a spiritual thing, suffering has to do with the loss of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
My dear mentor used to say, the tragedy isn't that people suffer and die. The tragedy is that they suffer meaninglessly and alone. And if we can find ways to create an experience of meaning and connection, that is a powerfully healing thing. And so it's something I hope to share with my colleagues, with my students, my residents, and with my friends.
So, Dr. Gardner, is it safe to say that as we're speaking to a broad audience on this show, yes, some are probably struggling with mental health issues, but others may not be. These individuals, if they're sensitive to it, they may realize that someone's kind of dropped off the radar screen. Maybe they're not at the tribal gatherings. Maybe they used to see them always at the powwow and they're not there a couple years in a row or whatever it might be, that we can take the initiative, regardless of what our training is, to be agents of healing in the community. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely. And I would say, here's a resource, and it should speak to virtually anyone. It's the book, The Power of Now, which has become a very popular book. Eckhart Tolle is the author of the book, and he does the book by taking a question and answering the question. And someone asks the question, so is happiness the same thing as inner peace? And he said, oh, no, not at all. Happiness is the times in which you feel your external circumstances are meeting your expectations. But inner peace is not like that. It's a quality of inner groundedness that is not dependent on what's outside of you. And it gives you an internal oasis to turn to. And you have to nurture that. You have to surrender. And his last chapter is on surrender to something greater than yourself and to give your life to it. So I think the inner peace is the thing we really need.
We're listening to Dr. Noel Gardner. We're going to be talking about more things that can make a difference as far as your perspective and your ability to help people in your sphere of influence. We're going to be speaking about wellness, broad concepts that can make a difference for you and for those around you. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We'll be coming back with more in the second half of today's program. Stay with us.
American Indian and Alaskan Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaskan Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Dr. David DeRose with my guest, Dr. Noel Gardner. Noel is a psychiatrist with a long history with the University of Utah and their teaching program, teaching residents in psychiatry. And he's sharing practical insights for our mental health, for our whole person health. Noel, before we had to step away, you were speaking about a distinction between happiness and peace. What I walked away from that was saying, hey, someone can say they're happy because things around them seem to be going the direction they want, if you will, but we can have a sense of inner peace regardless of whether things are meeting our expectations. So if I've got that correct, how do we go from there to helping people in the midst of those challenges, in the midst of those tragedies that blindside us, if you will?
Well, I think the most important is to convey the special value and uniqueness of every person. You know, it's the thing that my mentor really modeled, and I sought to bring that to the work that I did. I was in the hospital for 15 years and then moved to other things. But what I found a consistent thing was that if a person felt that they were valued from the very first minute, I used to talk about this triad. A friend who taught public speaking said there are three questions you have to answer, whether you get up to speak to three people or 3,000. And everybody has these questions in their head that they don't know they have. And the first is, do I like you? And the second is, do I trust you? And the third is, can you help me? And if they don't accept all those questions, you've lost them. And I think about that when I would meet with a new patient, and for them to really say, boy, I like you, I trust you, and I can see you're going to work hard to help me. We became partners. I wasn't the doctor, and they were the patient. We were therapeutic partners. And the more they could help me understand their experience, the more I could really question and seek and understand it, the more we became partners, the more successful treatment was. And I think that's just friendship as well.
Yeah, I love this picture because really what you're talking about is this healing dynamic to friendships. You saw that in your early life history. You know, you mentioned the rich cultural fabric of the Navajo Nation and how you resonated with indigenous peoples and this sense of community. And really, I hear you saying, Dr. Gardner, and I hear the application being, if we want to be agents of healing, whether we're running a business, whether we're an auntie, whether we're a grandfather, a tribal elder, it doesn't matter our role. if we're taking an interest in people, caring for them, valuing them, we're going to be a healing influence in our communities. Is that part of the equation?
Oh, you got most of it. I think you got it, pretty much nailed it. And it was what the lady who was the housekeeper in the hospital. She saw people. She really saw them and listened to them, valued them. And everybody rushing around doing a million tasks didn't have the same impact. Those are things you don't have to have a fancy degree to be a fancy doctor or teacher or whatever to do. We can do it for each other.
Now, I know one of the other things that has interested you, Noel, as you've practiced psychiatry is this whole connection between the mind and the body.
Mm-hmm.
We sometimes separate them out in medicine, right? I'm an internal medicine specialist, so I'll take care of the body. We'll send the mental health issues to the psychiatrist. And we even refer to things sometimes that way as the issue or the problem instead of the person. Working with indigenous populations and indigent populations, not necessarily the same. I've worked with a lot of poorer white populations as well in my work, rural populations, and the psychiatry availability is often very limited in some of those settings. So we're doing mental health work as primary care providers also. But I think one of the things that you and I have in common is that we realize that you can't separate the mind and the body. And I know you've taken a real interest in wellness as a broad concept as you dealt with your patients. Tell us a little bit about that and what we can learn from it.
Yeah, so what I can do is, after doing many other things, after leaving that hospital role, in the medical surgical hospital role, I did a variety of other things. Late in my career, having left working with medical students and residents in training, I really missed working with students. I really loved the time with students and medical residents and psychiatry residents. And I was offered a position to be the medical director of a community mental health center. These were people who were of low income. Almost all of them were on Medicaid. Some of them were unfunded. And this is where many of the people with serious mental illnesses got their care, because the illness really prevents them from being successful in some kind of career where they could have private health insurance. But I was able to have four or five residents at any given time, and I loved working with them. There were great stories. What I can tell you, I came away with great admiration and appreciation of the resilience of people who had had really difficult lives.
Mm.
They had lots of trauma, poverty, you know, and I did that for about a year and a half. And then the special support for that community mental health system collapsed.
Mm.
Almost all the residents were pulled out. Most of the doctors and nurse practitioners left, and we just couldn't function. And I left as well. It was not a safe place to work. But that's the moment I realized I really needed to work with this population of people, and started a nonprofit that provided completely free care to people who were poor, who had serious mental illnesses, had no insurance. And we knew we couldn't treat the people who were living on the street homeless because their needs were too great.
Mm.
We were almost homeless, that if we couldn't get them in quickly and get them stabilized and back on their Medicaid and back out in the world, they would have their whole family on the street.
Wow.
And it was one of the privileges of my life. And boy, forgive me for ever complaining about my life, because these people who were resilient, still coming in for help, and the ability to often help them, they were so grateful. It was the greatest joy of my entire professional career, was working in this clinic, doing this clinic.
We've talked about this term several times, resiliency. And a lot of folks, when they hear it, they say, oh, well, that's something I don't have. That's why I'm going through these difficulties. And yet I hear you, Dr. Gardner, talking about people who seem, by human assessments, to be down and out, but you're describing them as resilient. So can you help us understand how all of us might be able to tap into some kind of resilience?
Well, I wish I had the answer. Most of the people who I was just amazed at their resilience, they're continuing to try to make a life for themselves, would tell you that they didn't feel like they had any other choice.
Hmm.
On the other hand, you know, I see a lot of people who've been given great privilege, but because they don't have all the successes that they feel entitled to, they're very bitter and very angry, and they feel shamed because they have this unrealistic false self, this false idea of who they were supposed to be. And if it didn't work out, they're angry about it, and they blame the world, they blame themselves. And the people with resilience, you know, one of my favorite books starts out with this line. It says, "Life is difficult." This is a great truth. Most of us are born into the world thinking it's supposed to be easy, that we're supposed to get a great education and fall in love with the person that we're meant to be with forever. And we're supposed to maybe a very successful life. And when that doesn't happen, we feel angry. We blame others. We blame ourselves. And when we finally accept the reality that life is difficult, it finally starts to become easier. And I think what I saw in most of the patients is these people didn't expect it to be easy, and they were incredibly grateful. Usually when they would leave, and we tried to get them stabilized quickly and out the door so we could take new people in. And frequently when they would leave, they'd come by to me and they'd say, "Doctor, can I give you a hug?" And I said, "Of course." I would often tell them that they had helped me as much as I was able to help them. I wouldn't trade the experience for anything.
So let's tie that into wellness, because it seems that when we speak about physical well-being, there is a connection with helping people be more resilient and be able to bounce back, if you will, more easily. Have you found that connection? And if so, where can we point people as far as a wellness program?
So I like this definition that I work from. And that is that wellness is a bio, psycho, social, spiritual, and financial wellness. Doesn't mean you're rich, but if you're living on the very edge, and we have to find a way to build a society that doesn't favor just the very wealthy and leave so many people behind. We need to bring that into balance. But it has to do with biological wellness. That has a lot to do with how we live everyday life, our psychology, how we think about the world. We just talked about the difference between happiness, which is external, and inner peace, which is something we can have all the time if we cultivate a certain way of being and thinking in the world. It's social. We need to be connected. So much of the suffering right now is from loneliness, and there's an epidemic of loneliness. Spiritual, people who've lost a sense of meaning and purpose in a spiritual life. And it doesn't have to be a formal, organized tradition or religion. People can find a connection to something higher, AA, you know, God as we understand it. And God is way beyond my poor little brain. But I have encountered something that's greater than me that has enriched my life immeasurably, and I'm so grateful for that. And then to begin to value economic justice in the world and to work toward that. So those are the pieces of it. Let me share, I have two very dear friends. We text each other along with a couple other friends in a group multiple times, almost every day.
Wow.
And they've done a wonderful program called the Wild Five, WILD, and then the number five. And if you go, there's a website that is www.wild5wellness.com. It has a lot of resources in a program that they developed by doing a 30-day study in which they asked people to do modest lifestyle practices every day for 30 days. These people looking for help from mild to moderate levels of anxiety and depression. And in 30 days, they had results from just living a healthy lifestyle, what they called Wellness Initiatives for Life Demands, WILD 5, and there are five of them.
Dr. Gardner, we have to step away just briefly. We want to come back and talk about the Wild Five, just what this means. I did get the website down, the wild5wellness.com. We're going to come back with a final segment with Dr. Gardner, practical things for you, for those that you care about. I'm Dr. DeRose. One more segment right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness, and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse, and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaskan Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to our final segment of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I've been speaking with a medical school classmate. We've really lost touch with each other until recently, and I've been excited to learn more about Dr. Noel Gardner and his work, and I was so glad that he's been willing to share that with us on today's edition of the broadcast. Noel, we've been speaking about resilience, contentment, peace, social connectedness. And one of those ingredients in the whole package is physical wellness. It ties in with mental, social, financial wellness, as you've been speaking. And there's a program that you've gotten very familiar with. You mentioned it in the last segment, but if someone's just joining us, tell us again what that program is called and how they access it.
Yes, it's called the Wild Five. Wellness Initiatives for Life Demands, WILD, and the number 5. So wild5.com. They have a website, a lot of resources and materials. And this is a psychiatrist, and his wife, who's a psychologist. They do a lot of, education and research related things. Very practical, not so much the esoteric academic thing from the university. But what they did is they took applicants to a clinic that were looking for help for mild to moderate levels of anxiety and depression, and they asked them to do 5 life practices for 30 days. Mm. They've written a book on the science of those 5, and what they state is these 5 practices have the most substantial scientific support for their benefit in mental wellness. And let me give you the 5. They asked people for 30 days to practice their choice of 4 of 6 sleep practices, sleep hygiene, we call it. So these are practices to help people sleep better. Turn off the technology for the last hour. Don't drink caffeine, caffeinated drinks later in the day. So they list the 6 and they chose 4. Okay. Then they said have at least 2 episodes of 5 minutes of mindfulness, to quiet the mind and change and become fully present in the moment. It's wonderful when it's done in nature and let nature just seep into you and to be present fully and not just in your head, but be present in the moment and to foster that. If you do it for 5 minutes twice a day, you'll find out you want to do it for, I found myself doing a minute of mindful breathing and meditation between patients in my schedule. And in 6 seconds, it's like a retuning, a recalibrating. It's retuning yourself. Then they asked people to do at least 20 minutes of moderate levels of exercise every day. And for them, they said this is walking, a brisk walk, enough to make it a little difficult. You get a little bit out of breath to have a conversation. So do that for at least 20 minutes. They just have people record what they ate, both their meals, snacks. And as people just became aware, they found themselves changing parts of their diet on their own. They suggested some diets, but they didn't push any particular diet. They said, these are the ones that would be most helpful. And then people became more aware. And finally, they were to have 2, at least 5 minutes social connections. It could be by phone or it could be FaceTime or in person with someone or several people, you know, at least 2 of these a day for 5 minutes with people they considered to be friends that were supportive, caring people. People need social connection. Found at the end of this is that on standard measures of anxiety and depression, they were more than 40% improved on those measures for both depression and anxiety, almost 50% better.
Wow.
And we don't see with medication very often. And this was completely independent of medication. So you don't have to be rich or have insurance. And that website allows you to download if you have a smartphone and you can track it and it will follow you with all kinds of support. And it's a wonderful website. So it's a practical way to bring forward the things that really give meaning and purpose and connections in our lives that can make us mentally healthier.
So this is simple stuff. I mean, conceptually, let me just make sure that I've got it all down because I've been taking notes. So we're going to focus on sleep hygiene, you know, some practices that help us to sleep better, to wind down and sleep better. Second, we're going to take some time for, I mean, people might use different terms, but nature bathing or spiritual reflection, meditation, prayer, would all those things fit under that umbrella?
It's to quiet the mind and make us fully present in this moment. So we're not just worried about the past. So much of the time we worry about things that are in the past that is gone. In the future, we worry about stuff that's not here yet.
Fair enough.
Fully present and in this moment brings an inner peace that's very helpful.
Is that related to this? I've seen more about the science of savoring, kind of appreciating things around you. Same type of idea?
Absolutely. And I have my favorite, Thich Nhat Hanh, a Buddhist monk who Martin Luther King Jr. said had a profound effect on his life. He has wonderful audio books and books. My favorite is Peace is Every Step, and he walks through a way to live a life. So now when I see a red light and I'm driving and I usually am in a hurry, I stop at the red light. And he calls them bells of mindfulness. He said in Vietnam, they'd hear the bells ringing from the Buddhist temples. And that's a time to call you back to your true self. So I always stop at the red light and I come back to myself and I bring myself. And I did that between patients and I started to practice being fully aware and then wanting to be fully present to my resident or to my patient, and to not just be in my head worrying about the past or the future.
Sounds good. So we've got two of those five elements. A third one is at least 20 minutes of exercise every single day.
Yep.
And then the fourth one had to do with, boy, I'm revealing that I'm a doctor because I'm having a hard time reading my notes here.
Awareness of diet. So just, they just had people become aware of it. They recommended like a Mediterranean diet, which most people could do. Some diets, like a ketogenic diet, are a little harsh for some people to try to do, but a much healthier diet.
Good. Diet awareness. And then fifth was the 2 5-minute sessions a day to connect with a supportive other person.
Texting does not work.
Okay.
So you can text to people, but you need to hear voice and you need to feel emotionally connected to somebody who cares about you.
So now I've sensed, Dr. Gardner, that you really care about people. You care about my listening audience. From this 1 hour interview, can they get credit or do they have to have a personal interaction with you?
Oh, they don't have to have a personal interaction, but they're always welcome to, you know. I can only do so much, but I do. It's a wonderful thing to care about other people because you know what? Then they also care about you and you get to share a wonderful sense of connection. That's what community is. And I feel very blessed to have been able to have the life I have, even though there were times I wasn't able to do well with the life that was given to me. I finally, you know, I'm a slow learner, but I've finally been getting there.
Well, I think everyone has got to appreciate the fact that, you know, you mentioned maybe not using the very words, but hitting rock bottom and really throwing your hands up and saying, what's the point, and coming close to really ending it all. But when people listen to your story, I mean, it gives me courage because no matter what I'm going through, no matter how bad it looks, the Creator can allow me to have been in that space to develop resilience and compassion. And we see that illustrated in your life, Dr. Gardner. I so appreciate it. You're taking time out of what I know is still a very busy schedule. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It was definitely my privilege, and you're doing a wonderful thing for all your listeners.
Before we sign off completely, Noel, I know we talked about a lot off air as well as on air, and there's some folks who've heard this program and maybe they've grasped a little bit of hope, but they're still struggling. What kind of final words of wisdom would you give someone, especially if they're struggling, maybe going through grief or trauma right now?
I guess the most important thing I would say is after the dark night, the sun does rise. And so I would encourage you to reach out if you can to anyone that you care about or you think cares about you, or to seek help from a mental health professional. But after the dark night, the sun does rise. And so I'd encourage you to reach out, seek connection.
So I hear the very strong encouragement from someone who's been on this journey and someone who's worked with hundreds, thousands of people. If you're struggling today, hang in there. Better days are coming. Thank you again, Dr. Gardner.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you to each one of you who've joined us for today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. As always, I'm Dr. David DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.